This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back, 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 back again. Shady's back, back, back. Tell a friend, friend, friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, I'll let you know where I've been right and where I've been wrong lately in the sports world. Get to that in just a little bit. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcasts. And the podcasts are always available online. Head over to charlestonsportsradio.com, click on our show page. And you can find the show podcasted there. You can also leave a comment for the show by heading over to charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page, leave a comment there. You can always get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. On the text line, 843-608-1734. Or on the phones, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. Got a message from Dale earlier that said a lot of Gamecock fans were not pleased with the hiring of Lamont Paris as head coach. After missing out on G.G. Jackson and Brevin Galloway last week, they are now more discouraged. Has the success of Shane Beamer in the transfer portal put even more pressure on Paris, and are we being fair to a guy that has not even coached a game for the Gamecocks yet? A couple of things. Number one, and we talked about the hire at the time, Lamont Paris would not have been number one on my list, nor number two. So I understand some of the maybe skepticism already. But you always have to wait. Couple of things. One, you got to wait for a guy, kind of as Dale alluded to, right? You got to see him coach a game first. Go through a season. But also, what makes it so difficult nowadays for coaches with the transfer portal is that when you have a coaching change, everybody just leaves. And so you're really behind the eight ball. You're normally behind the eight ball because you're just starting out and you're trying to build a culture and your roster and you're going up against teams that are maybe more well-oiled machines because their coaches have been there for a while, and you're entering a tough conference, and it's the first time you've been a head coach in the Power Five in this case. Then, on top of it all, it's like, okay, we just lost everybody. We have to start completely over. And then you bring in 12 new faces that all have to gel together, and they've never played with one another, and they don't know one another. In fact, to bring it even more local, it's something I discussed about the College of Charleston this past year at Pat Kelsey. It was something like 12 newcomers on the roster, plus a whole new coaching staff in a new town, in a new conference, and they lost a bunch of close games this year. And I think part of that reason is just they're all trying to get on the same page. They're trying to figure out or learn how to win or play off of one another, and even Coach Kelsey's trying to learn his guys. So it makes it even more difficult, more challenging for first-year coaches. I'm seeing it with the Citadel. I mean, they literally have like six guys. Everyone transferred. And so now you have to go try to find guys in the transfer portal just to really plug spots. Not necessarily, in some cases, players that you actually want to be there, but players that have to be there because you need to fill up a roster. It's like, shoot, right, we're about to start the offseason, and we only have five guys under scholarship. So the transfer portal makes it really tough on new coaches. Now, the benefit also is that it is easier then to fill those spots. You're going to lose everybody in the transfer portal, but you can at least replace them in the portal instead of having to fill out a team of just, you know, 12, 18-year-olds coming out of high school. You can never compete that way. So all that's to say, for any first-year head coach, you got to give them a little time. I know we're very impatient. We judge these coaches now quicker than ever. It used to always be 4 years before you can make a determination. Give them 4 years, let them get all their guys in, go through a full recruiting cycle where everyone on that roster was brought in by that coach. Now it's like, you know, 2 years in, if you're not winning, you're out. More so in football, but even so in basketball. So for Lamont Paris, right, give the guy some time. G.G. Jackson, that was a long shot. Brevin Galloway, Clemson's his backyard. I can understand why he'd want to stay there. And by the way, he averaged 8 points in the ACC last year. Would it be a good addition? Sure. But did you miss out on, you know, the next Michael Jordan? Of course not. You get Malachi Smith, though. I'll continue to say it. You get Malachi Smith, that would be a big get for Lamont Paris. And he's added a couple of interesting pieces in that transfer portal. But when you're a new coach like this, you're just going to have to try to piece it together. It's like putting Humpty Dumpty back together. Or doing a puzzle or something. You just got to try to find something from everywhere, and hopefully that it all fits together. And that's the test of these new coaches. That's what Lamont Paris is going to have to do. in regards to the other part, the success of Shane Beamer in the transfer portal, yeah, maybe that puts more pressure on Lamont Paris. Not only just using the transfer portal, but I think that's pretty normal, that if somebody else is having success in the same area, right, it kind of makes you look worse. But if it's specifically, the question specifically about the transfer portal, hey, they're using the transfer portal great over there, why aren't you? Sure, but I think Lamont Paris is doing okay in the transfer portal. And again, it's his first year, give him some time. So there's got to be a little bit of a buffer period, right? We got to wait at least one full year before you can judge Lamont. I did not like the hire to begin with. I think it's an uphill climb for him, but let's see what he can do. Let's see his team actually go out on the court first before we completely judge him. The Athletic, by the way, graded it as the worst coaching hire in college basketball this year. So that's not great. A lot of people are down on the hire. We'll see if it works out for South Carolina. G.G. Jackson would have been a huge get, but the chances of him coming to South Carolina I thought were slim, especially when Frank Martin left. Brevin Galloway, that's okay. You missed out on him. And get some of these other guys. We'll see how things go. Name, image, and likeness getting out of control, though, with all these players moving around and what's going on with Miami basketball. All right, every so often, I let you know where I've been right and wrong. I hold myself accountable. It's a chance for me to maybe brag about some right opinions, but also to remind you of the things I got wrong. Because a lot of times people say all sorts of crazy things in this industry and then act like they never said such a thing. I'll let you know where I've been wrong and the ridiculous things I've said lately. We'll run through some thoughts from the NBA playoffs, the NFL draft, maybe even a little baseball as well. It's where I've been right, where I've been wrong. We always start with a positive.
Where Luke was right.
I gave you all my predictions at the start of the NBA playoffs. One of them that I nailed was just that Denver wouldn't have enough. And Golden State blew past him, and the Warriors looked really good in the process. Looked like the best team in the playoffs. But for Denver, it was just a lost season because of all the injuries. And as good as Jokic is, he's my MVP this year, he's just not enough. And he tried to do as much as he could in that series. I mean, he would take over games, especially in the fourth quarter. He was scoring over 30 points. He was putting up near triple-doubles. He was doing everything he could. He just did not have enough help around him. And it's a real shame that when you lose, in this case, two of your top three players, it's kind of just a wasted year. You know you're not going to compete in the playoffs. Hopefully you're healthy next season. Kind of a waste of time. But it's a credit to Jokic, and it shows to me why I think he should be the MVP. Because he does everything for that team, and he carries that team. Doesn't have a second fiddle to play off of this year. And he's a big guy that is the best passer you've seen in years, and he could take over a game and score it, and he could set up his teammates, and he obviously does a great job rebounding. He's a tremendous player, but he can't win on his own. The Warriors looked great. The Nuggets win only one game. They get eliminated. I figured this series wouldn't be much because Denver just does not have enough firepower behind Jokic to keep up with Golden State.
Where Luke was wrong.
Probably should have led with this because it was really wrong. But the Brooklyn Nets, of course, I thought they would beat the Celtics, and I thought they could potentially win the East. Now, they were not my official pick. Bucks-Suns was my NBA Finals prediction at the start of the postseason. But I thought the Nets very easily could have disrupted my entire bracket by winning the East. They didn't win a single game. It was embarrassing. Now, we covered it quite a bit throughout that series, but that was just pitiful. Durant did not look like himself. Kyrie Irving, after game one, certainly didn't look like himself. And Boston just played a tenacious defense. They were clearly the better team. And it was a real win for the analytical crowd who's been telling everybody that the Celtics are the best team in the league and the numbers support it and they're really good defensively. And they stole Brooklyn's lunch money throughout that series. That was embarrassing for the Brooklyn Nets. We covered it here on the show. But I thought the Nets would win that series and go pretty far. I thought, hey, you know what? They didn't have a great year. They haven't had a great couple of years. But when you have those two stars, Durant and Kyrie, you put them together in a playoff series, you can beat anybody. And both of them played pretty terribly. They were not the two best players on the floor. They were probably not even two of the top three players on the floor. They were bad. And the Celtics showed that they were a much better team, more of a well-oiled machine, and the better team beat the better stars in that series. I thought the Nets could go pretty far. They didn't win a single game. What an embarrassment, not only to themselves, but to people like me who actually bought in and believed in them. And they couldn't win a single game. So I was clearly very wrong on the Brooklyn Nets.
Where Luke was right.
The Milwaukee Bucks would breeze through the Bulls. They made it tough a couple of those games, but the Bucks were certainly able to pass go and take care of business with the Bucks pretty easily in the first round. And then they beat the Celtics on Sunday without Chris Middleton, which was a big win for Milwaukee. I did not think they would struggle with the Bulls. I'm curious to see how this series goes because I would have told you the Celtics would win this series. Now the Celtics better win tonight and get back at least split there on their home floor after the Bucks stole home court advantage. But Giannis is playing great, and this, for Giannis, is his LeBron moment. without Chris Middleton. He's already got the championship, but now he can try to do it really on his own, putting a team on his back. And so far he has. Triple-double on Sunday, played great defense, leading the way for the Bucks. I knew they wouldn't struggle with the Bulls, but they've really impressed me already through the first six games of their postseason run with how good the defending champs have looked so far.
Where Luke was wrong.
The Raptors. I thought the Raptors would actually beat the Sixers. Maybe if they elbowed Joel Embiid a little bit early on in the series instead of the final minutes. But the Raptors did not have... I like the matchup against Philadelphia, but as the series was unfolding, it was clear they just did not have that star, that go-to guy, a big enough playmaker to win in the playoffs. Meanwhile, Joel Embiid was fantastic. The Sixers did have that guy. Maxey stepped up. Harden didn't do a whole lot, played well in the final game of the series, but the Sixers just had the bigger stars and more firepower than Toronto. I like the matchup for the Raptors, but it turned out to not be a very good matchup. They didn't have the guys to try to compete. They couldn't match up with Embiid after all. They didn't have the star power on offense. And Doc Rivers, while he didn't choke away that series, what are you doing? Leaving Joel Embiid on the floor when you're up 30 with 4 minutes to go. And now you don't have him for this series against Miami, and that's probably going to lead to your ouster. And Doc's going to deserve a lot of blame for that decision. So while the Sixers didn't choke away the series, and they actually did win and advance, I didn't see it coming, still, I question what Doc was doing that is really going to hurt them now this round against Miami.
Where Luke was right.
Going into the draft, I said Ja Morant will be a better NBA player than Zion Williamson. I'm going to take a right on this because right now I'm watching Memphis battle in the playoffs as a two seed, and Zion Williamson hasn't played in over a year. And by the way, the other part of this is that the Pelicans, without Zion, were a playoff team this year and took the best team in the league to six games and made them battle without their best player, Zion. Now, you could tell me, hey, with Zion, right, maybe the Pelicans could be an interesting team in the West. Sure, but I can't trust that he's going to be on the floor, that he can be counted on. And without him, the Pelicans look just fine this year. And by the way, the Pelicans got more than twice as many minutes from rookies as any other team in the playoffs. And yet, still made the playoffs, competed with the Suns. This is a good little nucleus they're building here. I don't think they need Zion. Meanwhile, for Ja, he is out there playing. You can count on him. And he's got the Grizzlies as the two seed in the playoffs. I don't know if they can get past the Warriors. But you want to compare the two right now. Ja Morant's leading the two seed in the second round of the playoffs, and Zion is now hoping. We're going to get to this coming up. But almost now, the tune has changed where he's hoping New Orleans signs him. Before, it was the opposite. New Orleans had to do whatever to please Zion. Now, he's got to play nice so that New Orleans will give him an extension because of how disappointing his career has been so far. Ja Morant, did you watch him go for almost a triple-double the other night? Certainly off to the better start, and I would expect it to continue when it comes to these guys in the NBA.
Where Luke was wrong.
I had the Jazz beating the Mavericks because we knew Luka Doncic would be out for a couple of games. This was an embarrassing loss for Utah. Over the last 5 years, they have the fourth most wins in the NBA, but they've won only one playoff series. And then this year, it's a 4-5 matchup, so it's the team that theoretically you're most evenly matched to, and they don't have their star, Luka. And the Mavs, without Luka Doncic, did you watch them last night? They really don't have a Robin either. Now, Jalen Brunson stepped up and played really well, but I also think that's a little bit of an indictment on Utah. But you get a little bit of a head start without Luka for the first half of the series, and you still lose. You can't even get it to a seventh game. You got beat by over 30 points in the biggest game of the series. Donovan Mitchell was not good. And now we get these reports that Rudy Gobert, right, it's either me or him. He's given an ultimatum. I've been on this for the last couple of weeks for Utah. You got to blow this situation up. It's just not working. It's a good regular season product. They can't win in the playoffs, but this was another embarrassing loss. A 4-5, no Luka for half the series. You lose in six games. You get embarrassed on your home floor. Donovan Mitchell shoots 30%. Another bad loss. I don't know why I trusted the Jazz. I figure, oh, Luka? No way can the Mavericks beat the Jazz without Luka Doncic. They were just fine. Jalen Brunson stepped up. The Jazz were the ones that looked like they were missing their star. They looked lousy. I know now. I should have known this already. Don't trust the Utah Jazz in the playoffs. I think they have to blow up that whole team and try to figure something else out because it's just not working.
Where Luke was right.
We've been talking about this quite a bit, but the whole super team era of the NBA, the big three. The big three this year, Clippers, Lakers, Nets combined for no playoff victories. I think we're going to see a change in the NBA where teams realize that may not be the best way to win. I don't know if it ever was. We talked about this with Pat Garrity about a week or two ago. You go back and you look, they never really have been all that successful over the years. They've won some championships, sure, but maybe not as many as you would think when you put these three big talents together. And instead, it's the teams that have drafted and developed and have been patient and have developed this young talent and then maybe go out and get one or two free agents like a Chris Paul, a Drew Holiday, Jimmy Butler, so on and so forth. I think that's the new way, and we're seeing that play out this year in the NBA. In fact, we've seen it the last couple years. The Bucks last year, the Raptors 2 years ago, exclude the bubble, doesn't really count. Now this year, the Suns were the best team in the league, did it through the draft and then added Chris Paul. That's the way to build. And now we have the Nets, Lakers, Clippers. Their seasons all are officially over, and they combine to win zero playoff games.
Where Luke was wrong.
I actually did think the Panthers would take a quarterback at number six. I made that prediction the day of the first round. Now, I like how the draft actually played out for Carolina. I like that you got Corral later on. You got a really talented lineman at number six instead. That helps the quarterback. But I thought they would go quarterback. I thought they would do whatever they possibly could to try to address that quarterback position because they are that desperate. I also didn't see the quarterback class playing out as it did, where Kenny Pickett was the only one that went in the first, whatever it was, 70 picks. I did not think that would happen. So I thought some quarterbacks would come off the board earlier, and therefore the Panthers, instead of waiting around for Matt Corral in the third round, you'd have to get your guy at six overall. And even if it's not a great quarterback draft class, you got to do something to try to improve this position, and you do it at six. So I thought the Panthers were going to go in that quarterback direction. I was obviously wrong, but in the end, I like how the draft turned out. You get a good lineman, you take a flyer on Corral, see if it works. They had their chance to go get Baker Mayfield. I probably would have pulled the trigger. They did not, but we'll see now how this team progresses moving forward. But they did nail a pretty talented lineman with the sixth overall pick.
Where Luke was right.
One of my other predictions was that a veteran would be traded. I didn't know who, but I knew somebody would be. And A.J. Brown was the big surprise on draft night. You also got Hollywood Brown traded as well. But we're in this era now where some teams have come around to the idea, like the Rams, about draft picks or even wide receivers. Other teams, not so much. There are multiple thought processes in the NFL. So some leagues really want the big play wide receiver. They're willing to spend. The Eagles did on A.J. Brown. The Cardinals are going to have to on Hollywood Brown. He's going into the final year of his contract. Other teams are saying, no thanks. If you're the Ravens, right, we're not going to spend big money to extend this guy. He doesn't really fit what we're doing. We're more about Lamar Jackson, and we run the football a lot. And the Titans, same idea. Nobody's run the football more than the past decade. They're thinking, why are we going to spend $100 million on A.J. Brown? We ran the football more than we threw it this past year. We got to build our offensive line, and we're already paying Tannehill and Derrick Henry. Other teams, meanwhile, they want to spend big on the wide receivers. And the wide receiver, the level of importance is increasing for that position. So you knew somebody would be willing to take a chance, and another team's looking to unload a guy like that, plus all the draft pick trades. Some teams are willing to move on from draft picks. Other teams want to still stockpile those draft picks. It just had the makings of something to happen. Maybe it would be Debo, maybe Baker Mayfield. Turns out it was A.J. Brown and Hollywood Brown Thursday night in round one of the draft.
Where Luke was wrong.
Another one of my bold predictions on Thursday. Now, look, these were bold predictions. I wouldn't necessarily take them to the bank. But nonetheless, hold myself accountable. I thought the Jaguars would actually go offensive lineman first overall. I thought we were going to get a surprise. And I thought Doug Peterson was going to win out because reports were, and Doug denied this afterwards. Of course he would. But reports were that he wanted an offensive lineman. And you just brought in Trevor Lawrence a year ago. You got an offensive coach. You had a bad offensive line. I thought, you know what? Everyone's talking about Trayvon Walker. They're going to surprise everybody and take a lineman tonight to address that offense. And they didn't. They took Trayvon Walker, which is perfect for what their GM, Trent Baalke, typically does. But at the first overall pick, I don't know if I'd be willing to take as big of a gamble as Walker is seen to be. If I have the number one pick, I want to make sure I'm getting some sort of production instead of betting on upside at first overall. I ran through the list earlier of first overall picks. Usually they're not the best players from their draft class. And in this case, I don't know if Trayvon Walker will be the best player from this draft class either. I don't think he will. But I thought the Jaguars, instead of trying to take a little bit of a risk or a gamble at number one, shore up that offensive line, get a little bit more of a sure thing, help out Trevor Lawrence and your new offensive coach. But this is what Trent Baalke loves to do. He loves to take those athletes, and we'll see if Walker works out at number one.
Where Luke was right.
The last one. We could go through other things as well. But for time's sake, the last thing I'll say, it's too early. Don't think I'm silly enough to already claim a full W a month into the baseball season. But I did say at the start of the year, we ran through the division winners. And while I was on most of the favorites, I said if there's going to be a surprise in the AL West, it'd be the Angels. The Angels and the Giants are my two. Now, look, we're only a month in. I can't get ahead of myself. But the Angels are in first place right now in the AL West, and they have one of the best records in baseball. Finally, they're starting to put it together. You have two of the better pitchers in Ohtani and Syndergaard. You have two of the better hitters in Ohtani and Trout. Rendon comes back. It's a pretty good team. You got Joe Maddon as the manager. They got Michael Lorenzen, who's pitching well this year. He also is a bit of a two-way player. It's a very unique situation over there in L.A. Joe Maddon's the puppet master. keep an eye on those Angels. Right now, the Astros are about 500. The Angels are in first place. I liked most of the favorites coming in, but one team that maybe not enough people were focusing on were the LA Angels, or the Angels, whatever they're called, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, whatever their silly name is. And right now, they got one of the best records in baseball. We're only a month in. I can't get too excited, but so far, so good there. And that's where I've been right and wrong, at least with some things over the last couple of weeks. When we come back, as I said, Zion Williamson against Ja Morant, it's no contest right now. Ja obviously is having the better NBA career. So if you're the Pelicans, what do you do? What does the future hold for Zion? We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, what does the future hold for Zion Williamson? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. The first thing we dove into today was talking about what pie would you eat if you had to eat a pie every day of the year, as Mel Kiper does with pumpkin pie. Michael reached out to the show and said he would have millionaire pie every day. This looks pretty good. I have to say, I am not familiar with millionaire pie. And it originated here in South Carolina, so I guess I'm showing that I'm not a, I'm just a transplant. I'm not a true resident of the Palmetto State. But I had to Google this, and this looks pretty good. I am not a big pie guy, but I can make an exception for millionaire pie, which has the name because apparently it's so rich. Right? The pie is so rich that it's got to be called a millionaire pie. Trent, you ever have a millionaire pie?
You know, Luke, I've lived here for quite some time, and I have never had a millionaire pie. I don't know where these are. We got to get one.
Yeah.
Get one sent to the studio, listeners.
That's right. I'm just looking at photos. I don't even know what's in it. It looks like cherry.
Yeah, it does.
I got to find a recipe here.
A lot of whipped topping on there, you know?
Yeah, that's good. Ooh, this says coconut.
Oh.
Pineapple, cherries. That's right up my alley.
Whoa.
Pecans. Love it. No bake and only 5 minutes to prep. This is my kind of pie right here. It almost looks like the food version of like a pina colada or something, and one of those fruity drinks you get. This looks pretty darn good.
Yeah, we got to get some.
Yeah, we're going to have to try this out. Whichever's our NHL thing. You got the Penguins, I got the Oilers.
There it is. We got to treat the other person to a pie.
Yeah, whichever team does not go further, you have to buy a millionaire pie.
Hopefully it's not $1 million.
Yeah, you're telling me. You got to buy that for the other person. Bring it in the studio. Yeah, we're going to have to try this. The NBA playoffs are continuing. I'll give you my takeaway from each of the first game of each series coming up in a little bit. But I can't help. Every time I watch Ja Morant, it may not be fair for Zion, right? But you're always going to compare him to Zion Williamson. And you see Ja Morant go for almost a triple-double on Sunday. Zion's not even playing. And, you know, how the turntables, as they say. Before, it was Zion almost, the Pelicans were almost begging Zion to want to come back to the team. Now Zion's going to have to play nice and hope the Pelicans re-up him because he's due for a contract this summer, but he hasn't been out there. He's played one season worth of games over 3 years. It's like in Seinfeld when George talks about who has the upper hand in the relationship, and he says, I got so much hand it's coming out of my glove. Same idea here. Originally, Zion had the upper hand, and the Pelicans had to do whatever you want, Zion, right? They were so desperate to have that new star, and you thought Zion was going to be the next big thing. But now, 3 years in, he's played 80 games. The Pelicans just went to the playoffs this year without him and battled with the best team in the league. And when you look at minutes from rookies, this is just for the playoffs. The Pelicans got 300 minutes from rookies in the playoffs this year. Next closest was Denver at about 65. So that's about 500 more than the next closest, 500% more, five times as much as the next closest team, playing from rookies, and yet still a playoff team, battle with the best team in the league. That's a promising sign for the Pelicans as they try to build something. Maybe they don't need Zion. Here is Zion Williamson when now asked about it. Remember, we've heard these reports. He wants to be in New York. Now here's Zion when he's asked about staying in New Orleans.
Of course. Of course. I wouldn't be able to sign it fast enough. I can't control rumors and how people feel about certain things. Anybody that know me know I want to be here. If they feel otherwise, I can't help that. But if you know me, you know I want to be here.
Said he couldn't sign it fast enough. Yeah, because that's probably your best chance right now. I don't think other teams would really be interested in Zion, at least not for the money he would like. Now suddenly, the tables have turned. The upper hand has been gained by the Pelicans. Now Zion needs them, maybe more than they need him. They can be tough negotiating, saying, look, we just made the playoffs without you. You've been on the floor for a third of your career so far. Zion is eligible for a five-year, $181 million extension this summer. No way would I ever agree to that deal. The only way I would do it is if the Pelicans do what the Sixers did with Joel Embiid. Embiid was very similar to Zion. Big guy, foot problems, missed a lot of games, and the Sixers said, okay, we'll give you a second contract, but we're going to have to protect ourselves in case you can't play. And Embiid agreed to the deal, and fortunately, knock on wood, right, at least up until this playoff, he's been pretty healthy lately. If I'm the Pelicans, I'm doing something similar. Like, sure, Zion, we'll keep you around, but we're going to need some real insurance here on this contract that we'll be able to get out of it if you're not playing, or we'll be able to save a lot of money if you're not out there. 5 years, $181 million is what he's eligible for. No way would I ever give that. And it's just interesting how things have changed so quickly, where now it's like Zion, right, kind of needs the Pelicans more than they need him. They just made it to the playoffs, getting more playing time from rookies than any team in the league. And they were in the playoffs. They won in the play-in round, battled the Suns. Zion sitting at home. Maybe you don't need him as much as you thought. Maybe he needs you. I'm curious to see what the future holds for Zion, but this obviously is not how most people expected the first 3 years of his career to go. Right now, I'm only signing him to some sort of big deal if I know I can get out of it pretty easily, or at least save some money if he's not on the floor. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500. Let's go to the phones. Terrence is with us. Terrence, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, how you doing, Luke?
Good. What's up?
Good. The one pie we eat every day?
Yes.
Sweet potato pie.
Sweet potato pie?
Yeah, sweet potato pie. Oh. Every day. I can eat sweet potato pie every day.
Now that's an interesting one. How often do you think you eat sweet potato now, sweet potato pie?
As much as I can find it, because, you know, it's kind of like a seasonal thing.
Uh-huh.
So they don't really come out till like around September, October. But, you know, every now and then you'll find them in the store, so I get them. If I get them, I find them, I get them, because I can eat them. I love them.
All right.
I know how to make them, too, so, you know. So.
There you go. Do you put, like, whipped cream on top of it?
Oh, of course. Got to. You have to.
Yeah, a little sweet potato pie with whipped cream.
The Angels, they are named the Anaheim Angels. I don't know why people think it's Anaheim, the LA Angels of Anaheim. It's just Anaheim Angels now.
I thought they changed it not a few years ago. They're back to something similar?
Yeah, I think they changed it back to just the Anaheim Angels.
Okay,
now, right.
All right. They should. That makes a lot more sense.
Right. But sweet potato pie, Luke.
All right, appreciate it. Appreciate it, Terrence. And, you know, I've never had sweet potato pie. Trent, have you ever had sweet potato pie?
Of course I've had sweet potato pie. It is delightful.
Yeah?
Terrence is right. It is one of the better pies we got out there.
As he said, it's seasonal. I would think pumpkin pie is also kind of seasonal, right?
It
should
be.
Are you getting pumpkin pie in the summer or in the spring?
Mel Kiper, you know, he just does it every day. It's like Nick Saban. You ever heard about his breakfast routine, Nick Saban?
No.
Every morning, Nick Saban eats a Little Debbie's oatmeal cream pie, two of them.
Ooh.
Two of them with his coffee every morning. Never changes. Never changes. Always does that. I'm worried about the guy's cholesterol, to be honest.
You know, when I was growing up, I've never been a breakfast eater. My stomach's not awake early enough. I'm not even awake early enough. I have no appetite. I don't want to eat in the morning. So when I was growing up, you know, you'd have to bring something to school with you. I would always grab, every day of high school, I would grab Drake's coffee cakes out the door. We would keep them in the cabinet. My mom would always make sure we were stocked up, and they were the two coffee cakes, so the single pack, and that was my breakfast every day of high school. But I got to tell you, I haven't had a coffee cake, I think, since high school. After 4 years, I got pretty sick of those things. But I used to love coffee cakes. And that was my breakfast every morning. Two little Drake coffee cakes.
I would think coffee cakes are a little seasonal, no?
I don't think so.
No, yeah, you can get them in, like, your local coffee shop, things of that nature.
You get your Drakes. You get them at your local market. They always got them now.
We do those on Christmas. Like, Christmas and holidays, we'll have a coffee cake in the morning.
It's delicious. Now, I think I ruined it for myself because I had it Monday through Friday for 4 years. That was all I would eat. And I would take it with me, and I'd have to wait a while. And I usually eat them, like, in first or second period because even I wasn't ready to eat when I woke up. Still to this day, I can't eat. I got to be up for a few hours. Do you have a standard breakfast that you go to?
Yeah, I'm kind of similar to you, Luke. I'm not too hungry in the mornings, but I've kind of been forcing myself to eat. So I usually just keep a classic, you know, broke boy on a budget here. I do three eggs scrambled, you know, maybe some fruit on the side. And I usually have that right before I leave for the studio.
Yeah, pretty solid. Sweet potato pie from Terrence. I like the only sweet potato I like is probably grilled. It's the only sweet potato dude. I can't stand you go to a place and they're trying to be healthy, maybe a little fancy, and you can't get regular fries. They only have the sweet potato fries, like French fries. Nope, can't do that. But if you're going to grill it, put it out in the grill, I could do a little sweet potato there. Otherwise, I'm not a huge sweet potato guy. But I'll have to try it in pie form. So you got pumpkin pie, sweet potato pie, millionaire's pie. Mel Kiper eats pumpkin pie every day. What pie could you eat every day? I'm not a big pie guy, so if I had to choose one, I've brought it up before. It's called Watergate pie. My grandmother makes it. I don't know if it's a well-known thing. I don't know if people even call it Watergate pie or if that's kind of our family. I have no idea. But it's delicious. It's pistachio and it's coconut. I think coconut.
Oh, wow.
No, pineapple. What am I saying? Pistachio and pineapple. Not coconut. I'm confusing my two loves. Love pineapple, love coconut. It's pistachio and pineapple. It's a greenish pie.
Mm.
And it's got, the crust is delicious. So good. Anyways, that's the only pie I really like. I don't know if I could eat it every day, but if I had to choose a pie, it'd be Watergate pie. And I forget, I think it was called, we've looked up why it's called that. I think it's from the Watergate Hotel, I think. Which, of course, you know, the whole Watergate thing with Nixon way back when. I think that's the reason for the name. I can't remember.
Was that his favorite pie? Is this,
maybe.
Is this what's going on?
Maybe. Me and Richard, we got the same preferences of pie, me and former President Nixon. Which I don't know if that's who you want to be aligned with on most things, but hey, if that was his favorite pie, he knows his pies, let me tell you. Little Watergate pie. Come on up, we get to Trent's Takes, but going to be a little different today. We did not say this on the show, so this may seem random, and it is kind of random, but I'm a man of my word. And as Trent put together his mock draft last week, we got into a conversation on Twitter about the mock draft. As we were getting ready for the draft to unfold, and somebody asked, you know, who had a better mock draft, Mel Kiper or Trent? And so I said, just kind of just randomly threw it out there, that for every pick, every pick that Mel gets better than Trent, Trent would owe a lap around the building here, the studio. Vice versa. For every pick that Trent gets over Mel, I would run a lap. I'm not really going to run, probably a jog, but around the studio. So anyways, Trent, in his 16 picks that he did, picks 1 through 16, beat Mel Kiper by 2. So I owe 2 laps. I'm not going to be on the air Thursday and Friday this week. And tomorrow I got to get a haircut. I don't want to go there potentially sweaty or whatever. Come on. So we're going to do it today. When we come back, we'll get to Trent's Takes, and I'm going to have to do a couple laps around the building during it as well. And we'll do it next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
In the morning you go gunning for the man who stole your
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll get to Trent's Takes in just a moment, and I'll get to my laps as well. We got the headset in on the phone line. Hopefully, the quality is okay. I'll be able to actually hear what Trent gets to. And I'm about to head outside and take my laps around the building. I'm sure I'll be back in here before the end of the segment because it's only 2. It's not bad.
It's not a huge property.
Yeah, let's not make it seem like I'm running a marathon out there. But I'll get my steps in. At least I'll get a head start on my steps. So I'm going to transition to the headset and head outside. And we do it around this time every day. We find out what's on the mind of the producer. I'm about to go run some laps around the building. And we get to find out the takes of the day from Trent.
What's on the mind of the Morrow Midday Show producer?
Draft Luke Morrow.
That's right.
It's time for Trent's Takes.
The radio cowboy will be coming, and he's coming soon, folks. And welcome to Trent's Takes, everybody. Now, real quick, do we have Luke Morrow on the line as he is about to run his laps? Luke, are you there, sir?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear. Here we go.
Perfect.
Start a running, pal. You know, Luke's a man of his word.
Warm out.
It's a little toasty. The humidity's up there, Luke. But get to moving, and we'll do Trent's takes here. Last night, Luke, obviously, Miami Heat go up 1-0 against Philadelphia. And I think it's really important for Miami not only to get the bench production that they did with Tyler Hero. He has to have a night like that every single night if the Heat want to continue and make a finals run. But I think the most important thing here, Luke, is that Miami has to go up 2-0. Without Embiid on that floor, Philly is nothing from what I saw last night. They don't have any offensive production whatsoever. The offense runs through Embiid. You have to go up 2-0, put yourself in a comfortable position going to Philly. And on the flip side of it as well for Philadelphia, James Harden just has to shoot the basketball more. I mean, he shot 13 times, went 5 of 13, had 16 points. He needs to be putting up James Harden and Houston-like shots, at least 20 to 25, especially when you don't have Joel Embiid. I don't understand Harden's game plan here. He's turned into more of a facilitator of the basketball than he is the dynamic scorer we used to know James Harden is. But, Luke, Miami has to go up 2-0. There's no way they can't.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you. We'll get more into this next hour when I'm actually in a seated position inside the studio. But James Harden is not the same guy. I got to catch my breath. James Harden is not the same guy he used to be. Sixers are in big trouble without Joel Embiid, for sure.
Big trouble, Luke. And, yeah, how many are you getting close to your first lap completed, Luke? How are we doing?
Yes, we just went on to the second lap. So we're halfway through, feeling good.
Feeling good. Well, a good thing is, Luke, you've been running a lot recently, so your cardio is up to par. There's no doubt about it. Now, speaking of the other series, Luke, the Suns look like they might wrap this one up and wrap it up pretty early. My question for the panel is, where's Suns and Four Guy? I need to see Suns and Four Guy. Everybody remembers the video last year of the Suns fan beating up one of the Denver Nuggets fans and basically just chanting Suns and Four in his face while he was, punching the gentleman, holding him by his chains. Suns and Four, there's no doubt about it. I think they make a clean sweep here in the semifinals, Luke, and we need Suns and Four Guy back on the court, maybe, off to the side, but we need Phoenix to have this guy back in the building, Luke. I don't know where he is. He had his 15 minutes of fame. We need Suns and Four Guy back. There's no doubt about it, Luke Morrow.
Yeah, get him back in there so he can pummel some more fans. Why not?
Yeah, might as well, right? Yeah, so, I mean, go ahead.
For sure.
How you doing?
You allowed me to catch my breath, which is perfect. Oh, I'm good. We're wrapping up in two laps. The thing with the Suns and the Mavs, Luka's the best player in the series, but I still don't think it's enough. So I'm with you that Mavericks could be in certainly trouble and could be out quickly against the Suns.
There's no doubt about it. Yeah, I mean, Luka had 45 last night. They still lost by 8. So, if you don't get production from your other guys on that roster, and you're right, they don't have the Robin to the Batman, which, by the way, I had to watch the Batman again after I was hanging out with somebody last night. They hadn't seen the Batman. I watched it again. I'm kind of turning a completely new leaf over on my Batman takes. I thought it was very, very good, Luke. But besides that, let's move on here to the NHL. We have some NHL updates for you folks. Top-seeded Carolina Hurricanes took down the Boston Bruins last night, 5-1. Incredibly dominating performance. Toronto stomped Tampa, which, by the way, back-to-back Stanley Cup champions. Who will take home Lord Stanley this year? We don't know, but Toronto hasn't won a championship in 50-plus years, and they beat the reigning champions 5-0. St. Louis absolutely bullied Minnesota 4-0, and L.A. squeezed out a win against the Edmonton Oilers. Obviously, that's Luke's squad. I got to say, though, Luke, 4-3, it was a close game. And what's Connor McDavid, I believe, an absolute game wrecker. He is their only piece on offense, it seems like. With the little knowledge I have of the NHL, he seems like the spark that these guys need to get them over the top.
Yeah, hopefully so. They lost on a third period goal against the Kings last night, as you said. Tough loss for my Oilers to begin, but we'll see. It's only one game. Hopefully it's a long series.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. And I do believe that Luke Morrow is re-entering the facility and will be coming into the studio. I know he's pretty tired. He's got to go get some water, so we're going to let him do that, and I will continue to move on. Luke mentioned earlier in the show, and I was a little taken aback by it, by looking at 2023 NFL mock drafts. I was very, very surprised because what was I doing last night a little bit? The exact same thing, going through mock drafts for the 2023 class, and I'm kind of looking at these quarterbacks that are in this class right now. You have, obviously, C.J. Stroud. You have Bryce Young. Will Levis is an interesting one, and I read maybe about two or three different mock drafts yesterday. Will Levis was up there in the top 10 with these other quarterbacks. Look, I think he had a great season at Kentucky last year, but I believe I read a Bleacher Report mock draft where they had Will Levis going 6th to the Carolina Panthers. I don't believe personally as of right now Will Levis is a top 10 pick. That definitely could change for the rest of the season. But right now, I looked at the odds for the number one overall pick next year, Luke. It is Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud tied at plus 200, and everybody else isn't close. So this draft class is a lot different than the last one because we have two quarterbacks who will most likely be the number one overall selections come next April, Luke.
Yeah, absolutely. I made it back inside, so hopefully the quality. I'm good. A little sweaty. Got a little lather going. It is hot out. And I was not dressed to do any sort of jogging just yet. But we made it through. It's okay. We'll see if the stomach cramps stop. Yeah, Will Levis is intriguing. This quarterback draft class next year, it's what we said going in. This year's draft class was not very good for quarterbacks. Next year can make up for it. I was surprised to see Levis in the top 10 on some mocks. But I do like his skill set. I want to see a little bit more this year. He lost his offensive coordinator, but he's another one of these intriguing names to watch, especially in the SEC, as a couple of guys that maybe are not on radars yet that could be intriguing NFL prospects. So that's going to be what's fun to see over these next 12 months, this quarterback draft class, how it develops this fall at the college level and what it leads to in the draft.
No doubt. And there seems like there are a lot of guys that could potentially go first round, unlike this past draft where we only saw one, that being Kenny Pickett. Now, Luke, just quick side note here. Dwayne Haskins would have turned 25 today. Just want to give you, you know, a shout out to his family. Rest in peace to the lovely Mr. Haskins. We love you, pal. And gone way, way too soon. Interesting note here about DeAndre Hopkins, Luke. So apparently, it seemed to me that the Cardinals would have had to know that this was coming down the pipe, especially trading for Marquise Brown. Now, I believe DeAndre Hopkins said in a statement, "I'm very mindful of what I put in my body and have always taken the holistic approach. So I'm working with my team to investigate how this could have happened." And also his marketing manager, I believe, said back in November he took some tests and they were all negative, and now this is just coming to light. Could this be an honest mistake from, you know, his body gurus? Because as we've seen from, you know, Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, guys like this, everybody hires a body guru and a whole team just to keep them healthy. And if you take the holistic approach, like it seems DeAndre Hopkins is, there is a chance that that could, you know, maybe something slips in that shouldn't have. But also you would think that DeAndre Hopkins has to check boxes on everything that's put in his body as well. So I'm a little confused with this because Arizona knew about it. It was very evident they knew about it. So I'm very confused with this whole suspension loop.
Yeah, I believe that I heard that he already had started the appeal process. He already went through the appeal. So, yeah, this has been known, which I think was part of the reason, not the only reason, but part of the reason why you go and you trade for Hollywood Brown, probably push you over the edge. Like, you're already looking to add somebody, and then it's like, oh, shoot, we're not going to have D-Hop for the first six. We need even more help now. Guys always go with that excuse, though, right? I want somebody to come out and just accept that, yeah, you know what? I did something I shouldn't have. And maybe DeAndre Hopkins is telling the truth, but every athlete that gets busted always denies it, and then the excuse, the cover-up usually is like, well, maybe I put something in my body that I didn't know was on the substance list. I'm going to have to check with my guy. They all say this. I'm waiting for somebody to get busted and say, yep, you know what? You caught me. I was doing something I shouldn't have. And I'm not, I don't care if you're vaccinated or unvaccinated. I just do think it's a little humorous about Hopkins didn't want to get vaccinated because he didn't want to put something in his body. And then he puts in a banned substance instead that gets him suspended. There's a little humor in that. But, big news yesterday with the 6-game suspension.
Yeah, I mean, a low-grade beaver tranquilizer was, I believe, one of the things that was put in his body. Whoever his body guru, you know, might be fired after this. But, again, for the Cardinals, though, Luke, you need DeAndre Hopkins on the field. We saw it last year how much the production dropped off, especially for that offense when D-Hop was not on the field. And personally, I don't believe Marquise Brown is just a plug-and-place guy that you can compare anywhere in the same stratosphere to a guy like DeAndre Hopkins. He's every team he's been on since 2014, he's led in every receiving category, and he's been hurt as well. So put that into perspective, the amount of production you get on a week-to-week basis. This is going to severely, severely hurt the Arizona Cardinals, because every year, Luke, Arizona starts off incredibly hot.
True.
So they'll go, you know, 10-2, and we're like, oh my goodness, Arizona's best team. They'll lose five straight and then get out first round of the playoffs. They need those 10 wins early to be able to compete.
Yeah. Maybe this will be what they need.
No doubt.
Hey, we'll get Hopkins back for the second half of the season. He'll be well-rested, and they could try to avoid some sort of slow start in the second half of the year. You know, that was pretty cool. I'm going to have to do that more often, going outside using the AirPods. I don't know how the quality sounds. Whenever I use the AirPods, my microphone's always terrible. I don't know what's wrong with these things. Spend too much money for a cheap microphone in those. But it was great. Walking around the building, I could go back to Bobby's office while being on the air. I like that freedom of being able to move around. Speaking of DeAndre Hopkins, we'll wrap up Hour 2 next with some thoughts. It's always interesting why the NFL is different from Major League Baseball when it comes to this PED stuff. We'll get to that next. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
Wrapping up Hour 2 of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Just went through Trent's takes of the day. If you miss anything from the show, catch on demand, search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Meanwhile, I was outside doing laps around the building to pay off, I guess you could call it a show bet, because Trent put together a better mock draft than Mel Kiper. So I owed, for the two picks he got right, two more than Mel, I owed two laps. My Apple Watch tells me it was almost a half mile. I made sure to make it worthwhile. I went through the whole property instead of just the building. You know, I did the whole thing. So, anyways, it's pretty good. Got a few steps in. I don't know if it was good radio, but it was nice to get some sun in the afternoon. Hey, DeAndre Hopkins. We were talking last segment about the DeAndre Hopkins suspension. I don't have a good answer. You're supposed to have big opinions in this industry. I don't really have one, but I always find it interesting that in Major League Baseball, a PED suspension is like a death sentence. In football, we don't really care so much, and I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's because it's such a physical sport and these guys are like lifting anyways. I don't know. I don't know if it's because baseball is more of an individual sport. Maybe it's more of an advantage in baseball. Helps you hit the ball further. And a home run's a big deal. In football, like, you still have to be a good route runner, and you still have to be able to catch, and you need a good quarterback, and maybe just doesn't have as big of an advantage. Like, Julian Edelman got caught for PEDs. I don't think people remember. Von Miller got caught. It's like, oh, okay, well, who cares? He's winning Super Bowls. DeAndre Hopkins. I don't think many people really care about this suspension. I don't really have a good answer, but I always find it interesting. In baseball, that's like the end of your career. We look at you differently. Football, it's like, oh, okay, he's going to miss six games. Hopkins suspended for the first six games of this year. Hour 3 coming up next.